ever the daddy. Yashoda na na na, Vajrajana Ranjana. Yashoda na na na, Vajrajana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balava Girivada Dari. Yashoda na na na, Vajrajana Ranjana. Yashoda na na na, Vajrajana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram. Jaya Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Jaya Dayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravajakacharya Sachara Sarasri Shemata Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vinata Swami Sri Prabhupada Namacharya Shivahari Das Thakur Kacharya Prem Shri Gaur Kri Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pabunin Chanana Shri Advaita Gadara Shivasa Vigur Bhakti Vinata Kijaya Aboyas Samadha Bodhis Glory Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga Shri Krishna Sankirtan Ki Jai. So we're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, the beautiful story of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we're reading the chapter about the renunciation of Kardama Muni. And we're on text 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Jnana Vijnana Yogena Karmanam Udharanjata Hiranyakesha Padmaksha Padma Mudra Padambuja. Jnana Vijnana Yogena. Karmanam Udaranjata. Hiranyakesha Padmaksha. Padma Mudra Padambuja. Please chant. Jnana of spiritual knowledge, Vijnana, an application, Yogina, by means of mystic yoga, Karmanam, of material actions, Udaran, uprooting, Jataha, the roots, Hiranyakesha, golden hair, Padma Aksha, lotus eye. Padma Umudra, marked with signs of the lotus. Padma Ambuja, having lotus feet. Translation. By mystic yoga and the practical application of knowledge from the scriptures, Kapila Muni, who is characterized by his golden hair, his eyes just like lotus petals, and his lotus feet, which bear the marks of lotus flowers, will uproot the deep-rooted desire for work in this material world. Purport. In this verse, the activities and bodily features of Kapila Muni are very nicely described. The activities of Kapila Muni are forecast herein. He will present the philosophy of Sankhya in such a way that by studying his philosophy, people will be able to uproot the deep-rooted desire for karma, fruit of activities. Everyone in this material world engages in achieving the fruits of his labor. A man tries to be happy by achieving the fruits of his own honest labor, but actually he becomes more and more entangled. One cannot get out of this entanglement unless he has perfect knowledge or devotional service. Those who are trying to get out of the entanglement by speculation are also doing their best, but in the Vedic scriptures we find that if one has taken to the devotional service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness, he can very easily uproot the deep-rooted desire for fruit of activities. Sankhya philosophy will be broadcast by Kapila Muni for that purpose. His bodily features are also described herein. Jnana does not refer to ordinary research work. Jnana entails receiving knowledge from the scriptures through the spiritual master by disciplic succession. In the modern age, there is a tendency to do research by mental speculation and concoction, But the man who speculates forgets that he himself is subject to the four defects of nature. He is sure to commit mistakes, his senses are imperfect. He is sure to fall into illusion, and he is cheating. Unless one has perfect knowledge from disciplic succession, he will simply put forth some theories of his own creation. Therefore, he is cheating people. Jnana means knowledge received through disciplic succession from the scriptures, and vijnana means practical application of such knowledge. Kapila Muni's Sankhya system of philosophy is based on jnana and vijnana. Mahavishnu Padaya Krishnamastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivinoda Swami Tinam Namaste Saraswati Devi Guru Vedavachari Shri 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 Panchakopas Chubacha Kipasinabe Vicha Patitanam Pavanibo Vaishnavi. So we're going to start studying the philosophy of Sankhya according to Kapila Muni. And here's stressing that we hear from disciplic succession. It reminds me of a class that Prabhupada gives at MIT, which is upper scholastic college, university. And he was giving a class to many students. And he says, oh, you have so much knowledge in this school, so many subjects. Anything you want to know, you can learn here, but is there one class? Is there just one class that will tell you the difference between a living and a dead body? And everyone was like, not really. So Prabhupada kind of smashed their ego. I know that I tried to preach down at New College, which is in Tampa. It's a quite a nice school where if you wanted to learn a subject, they, no matter what it was, they would find you a teacher. But, you know, what are the qualities of this teacher? Are they on the level of Kapila Muni? I don't think so. A real acharya is one who can teach by example, who's applying the knowledge, who's self-realized. And he's not a cheater, and he's not a speculator. He's heard from the authorities. I actually was exploring different spiritual paths in college, and I thought, you know, I had like a religious experience, something like that. And I thought, okay, I'm going to give this college a last chance. I'm going to take a religion class. I was not attracted to religion at all. And so I took this class, and I was so disappointed. Because all they do is present all these different philosophies. This religion says that one says that, but that one says that, and that one says that. Okay, here's all the philosophy. Yeah, you figure it out. And I left away with nothing. Nothing except for a bunch of speculation and some ideas. So I called my parents and I said, I'm out of here. I got to find what the real answers are and how to apply it. So this is what happens. When the soul is hankering for spiritual knowledge, it needs an absolute source. Here it says that this philosophy that Kapila Muni is giving, who is the best source, the most direct source, coming from incarnation of the Supreme Lord, he's going to give the philosophy of devotional service, which uproots this desire for material sense gratification. In the ashram, we used to show a series of movies called Roots. I don't know if everyone's seen it. It's about a American black person who follows. It's actually a real story. And he goes and he tries to find out where his roots come from in Africa. And it ends up going all the way back, and he actually finds the tribe of the person that he came from. And I was thinking, you know, if we try to all follow our roots back, every living entity in the universe tries to find their roots back, they're going to end up in the same place. And it's not Africa. It's actually in this desire for sense gratification, to take the results for ourselves. This is what has rooted us here and has made us go through so much turmoil of taking body after body and suffering, struggling for existence, and trying to find this enjoyment. But that's what Kapila Muni is going to do. He's going to uproot that desire just by devotional service. And of course, our activities are a reflection of our desires. We do what we do today because of our desires to do certain things. So if you look at the Bhagavad Gita, there's many chapters that describe activities, what to do and what not to do, what the results are going to be. You get your B karma, you get your other karma, and then there's A karma with no results, which is the best thing. But ultimately, all these other karmas are going to entangle you, and you're going to have to come back and get rid of those results. So Kardama Muni is saying that just devotional service, working without the desire for this sense gratification, that will untangle the knots, and unroop the knots that keep us here. So this is a whole different atmosphere where instead of gimme, 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 I want what I deserve, as to let me just give without expecting any result. And that's a whole different mindset than the Western world and most people are brought up in. I know when I finally made the phone call after I left school and I found Prabhupada out west, and I called up and I said, I found the answers, I found it. They were so disappointed. Here I have my dreams for my kid, and she's got her dreams of enjoying this and conquering this and being successful in this and that and that. And now it's all ruined because now she's going to serve some man, serve some God that doesn't exist. What a waste of this human form of life. So disappointed. That's unfortunately our upbringing, that yes, I have to get what I deserve, what I work hard for. So now she's not going to work for that. She's just going to work for who knows what. She's going to be miserable. She's not going to be happy. So this was the disappointment of the parents. Now, I had a visitor two nights ago. It was Akinchana's mother. And she's here because of her son. And I think maybe got Brahmin initiation or something. I don't know. But anyway, so I said, I have to give class, and I'm just wondering, what do you think about, your son renouncing here? He's in brahmachari, shaved head, he's not going to do this and that, and, this dream and that dream. What do you think about these? She says, I'm happy. What a difference of consciousness, I said, you must have been raised in India in a pious family. She goes, yes. So this is the difference, Here, she's appreciating that he's taken that choice to give up the life of frustration and of trying to follow your hankerings for this and that, and just taking to a simple life of serving the spiritual master and achieving eternal real happiness. No more boga tiaga, oh yes, I want this, no, I don't want this, yes, no. So this is someone who has to be honest with themselves that there really is no happiness even though if I get the best job or whatever, I'm successful. Now, there's a nice example of Bhadra Narayan Maharaj, who I think he was invited to attend he heard about his father's retirement celebration. And in that celebration, his father mentioned that I should have retired like my son did at the age of 17. he says, here I am in the 70s, I'm finally retiring. But my son, he just retired his material life at 17. And of course, Bhadra Narayan, he was so successful spiritually. And surely he's back with Prabhupada, back to Godhead. So this is honesty, but we really have to do that. Because this lifetime is meant to engage in pleasing our spiritual master, in pleasing Krishna, and engaging in this wonderful process of worship. Although Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I was reading the other night a little anecdote that he had written, said that actually when you're on the level of, rasa realization, understanding who you really are, and you're engaging in that mental service to Krishna, even in this material body, says that's the beginning of your real worship, your real service. So we're not quite there yet. At least I know I'm not near there. But we can see that worship of our spiritual master, that is our link. He's offering it to Krishna, just like we said, I'm assisting my spiritual master by addressing the deities. So this is our path that we're on. We have to be patient. We are contaminated with this Western idea of a karmic reaction. So we have to be patient. And so actually, who to follow? I know that when I met Srila Prabhupada's disciples and just read a few words of his book, her little 5-10 minutes of philosophy that the devotee said, I was convinced. It took me that long, 5-10 minutes. I was convinced because that chain of disciples of Prabhupada and his guru and sadhus that he'd met, and of course Rupa and Sanatana, and going all the way back, there's that potency, that power. He's repeating those words, and therefore it can change one's heart and actually begin to make us remember that the reason why I'm here is to actually finish up my business in this material world and get out of here. So it's very important that we listen to the spiritual master. Now here, we're hearing the description. A scriptural authority is presenting who this Kapila Muni is. So there's no doubt that he's an expansion of the Lord. Everything about him, we've learned who his parents are, we've learned where he was born, when he came, and now we're hearing what he's going to promote through his preaching. We even know what he looks like. He's got light hair, which is very unusual for that day and age, to have very light hair, beautiful eyes and lotus flowers and lotus petal eyes and marks on his feet. So this is a prediction. Long time ago, this was written so long ago, but here we see that this is something we can accept and we benefit greatly from it because it is authorized. So the absolute truth must be authorized. Now, when I joined, there was a great upsurge of thirst for spiritual knowledge, especially from the East. That was like, yeah, I got to get it from the East, from a guru or something like that. And so many people that so-called enlightened people decided, hey, I can go to the West and I can get disciples and I can give them my hocus pocus or whatever, and I can cash in on this because they all want, some truth. So I can go. And we saw influx at that time of different maharajas and maharishis come over and start to try to cash in on this hunger for spiritual knowledge. And there was one person, he was only 14 years old when he came over, and with his flute, he said, I'm Krishna. And he gained 20,000 or more premis, and he so-called could enlighten them with a divine light from his whatever. And it was a great competition for the devotees, actually. He had an Astrodome in Houston, a big thing where thousands and thousands of people came, and of course this was upsetting for especially the South. I think 20,000 Lutherans came to protest that this is not God, and the devotees were there chanting, and they were chanting so loud that they had to arrest them because they were so upset with this popularity. So this is something that goes on, and then the mother came and said, actually, it's not this son, it's the other two sons, and then he fell down with his secretary, and then everyone started realizing this guy is a cheater, and he was kicked out, and now he has still some following, but anyway. So here we have it right in front of our eyes. This is the absolute truth. He's not a cheater. There are many people do want to be cheated, but for those who are dear at heart, Krishna presents his greatest philosophy. Here, Kapila Muni is giving his philosophy to his mother, Devahuti. And he's able to actually untie the knots because she realizes this is very tangly. I've gotten all entangled in the sense gratification. I want to get out. I don't know if any of you have ever studied knots, making knots, It's really fantastic how they make all kinds of knots. There's one where you can tie two together and pull, and you cannot break them. But if you just take one little end and go, boom, it comes apart. So this is what Kapila Muni did. He said, just with devotional service, pull on this end, engage in spiritual activities towards Krishna, and you're free. So this is what we want to hear. But he didn't preach, you know, just become renounced. He said, actually, you have responsibilities. And he tells you, yes, these are activities that you have to perform, especially in household life. So how to do that? It's not impractical. It's a practical application of doing devotional service, putting Krishna in the center, like this young man's bringing his kids to the temple. He's obviously trained them nicely. I was going to ask him to repeat the class, but he didn't come to class. But Nanda says he's really good. The little boy can repeat. So this is our duty to train our families to also become Krishna conscious. So it's not an artificial renunciation. It's a maturity of consciousness that we have to develop by hearing these instructions of how to engage in the material world but not be part of it. And this is an art that we should learn, and this is something that we should spread to others. It begins with training in the beginning. We have the Gurukul system where here they're learning scripture, they're learning how to worship the Lord and studying different ways that they can engage their life in spiritual pursuit. So we have to be very, realize that this training is very important. And now, even though we're, you know, so-called, you know, devotees of God doing service, we should realize that we're walking still on that razor's edge. We can fall off at any moment, and Maya's there gladly to catch us and engage us in her service. But because we have sneakers on, we can walk on that razor's edge and not get cut. And that's the mercy of the spiritual master. By following his instructions, we are safe. But we still, you know, have to be following those instructions and keeping our ego down, realizing that my service is important, how I do it, the motivation, that it's not filled with still that little tinge of, yes, I want some result. And this does happen. The nectar of instruction warns us that we shouldn't over-endeavor. This is one thing that happens, is that we get so excited about doing devotional service that we want to do more and more and more and more and more, and then we forget to put the devotion behind it, and then we're thinking, yes, I want to do this project for Krishna, I want to do that project, and then we compromise because we're so busy thinking that of the result that we compromise our sadhana, and symptoms are that we, you know, we lose taste for our japa, we're too busy with this, and we engage in thinking more of the results of Krishna. So this is endeavor, but we can't be sloppy in our consciousness how we do things for Krishna. It has to be done very diligently and very Krishna consciously. So this is something that we have to be reminded all the time. Therefore, we have Shastra, Guru, Sadhu. Just like there was one devotee in our community, and he was determined to make movies for Krishna. That's what he liked to do, and that's what he wanted to do for Krishna. And Prabhupada said, no, this isn't a good thing. But he said, no, I want to make movies for Krishna. I want to make movies for Krishna. And Prabhupada said, no. And so Prabhupada could see that this wasn't going to be successful, or this was not good for him. Also in the book about the rhinoceros, shooting for the rhinoceros, Shyamasundara admits that he was into this gem thing, you know. Oh, so I want gems. I'm going to give portion to Krishna. Yeah, we can make money. Gems. And then he slowly started to float off, and he admits that, you know, this is something that Prabhupada said, all right, if you have to, okay, you know. But Prabhupada was reluctant to agree on it. So we have our shastra, and we have our guru, and our friends. If they see us going off this way when we should be going this way, we can respect that help and get back on the road. Because it is a road of struggle, even in Krishna consciousness. Luckily, I was spared the material struggle to a great degree. I'm realizing it now because my granddaughter is graduating from graduate school, and her last semester is just how to get a job. And it's hard out there. She's struggling, you know, have this interview after this interview, and luckily she's had some so-called success. But it's not an easy world out there. And even in the devotional service, we have to be careful of our activities, because this process is perfect if we just follow it nicely and if we apply it. That's the most important thing. It's not just a armchair philosophy where we sit back and we just read the books and say, yeah, this is great. It's really nice, you know. Yeah, this devotional service is where it's at. Yeah, the books are wonderful but no, we have to, as Prabhupada said, keep the iron in the fire. So the devotional service, if we keep in the fire of doing and actually doing that, giving it the result to Krishna, that will purify us. And that's where the application becomes where it really works, is that we're being purified. And then that purification, then we can realize the knowledge. So it's a science. And we have to follow it very carefully. So especially the holy name, not just, you know, physical service, but actually direct contact with Krishna through the holy name. This is also a science. How much am I actually contacting Krishna during my 2-3 hours of chanting in the morning? I can do so much contact, you know, giving the results of work to Krishna, but am I working on that relationship with Krishna? Because it's a balance. You have to learn the balance of material and spiritual. And so I can become detached from material things, but I have to become attached to Krishna. And that's done through developing a relationship. I don't have a relationship with people unless I'm with them, you know. So I need to contact them. That's why my greatest relationships with the devotees are ones that I do service with. So this is an important thing, that we spend a good amount of our time, especially in our japa, in our hearing classes, on absorbing ourselves in Krishna, becoming very attached to hearing his glories. Srila Prabhupada realized in the beginning that we weren't going to just sit around and chant, though, that 64 rounds would take me all day to chant. It would take me all day and night to chant 64 rounds. And I would be frustrated, totally frustrated. So Prabhupada realized that, so he put us out on the streets, he put us into spiritual sky incense, he did all kinds of activities for us, sent us to different countries, book distribution, book publication, to keep us busy, to keep us in that fire. And he still has a list, you know. There's a list of things that he wants us still to do, and we're still in his army, we're still his recruits. So we should find some of those things and still keep very busy in satisfying the spiritual master, because that is our link. Very important to realize that he's going to give us the strength and he's going to offer our service to Krishna. So we can't let go of this knowledge and the application of the knowledge. It's very important. So these are some very good roots that we could have, very tied to our spiritual master. Now, I do a lot of work out in the garden, especially this time of year, because the weeds in Florida grow taller than the plants that you're trying to grow, right? They can grow nice and high. And if you're not constantly taking out the roots, then you're not even going to find out the poor little plant that you tried to grow, you know, because you've got all these weeds. So I'm constantly trying to take out the weeds, and if I have help, I tell them, look for the roots. Don't just snap them off at the top, because they're going to grow again in a week, just like the grass. They're just going to grow. They cut down a tree on the corner here. It was a walnut tree. I don't know if you ever saw it, but it's really a beautiful walnut tree. Humsrupa, who was president here, asked me about that tree, if it was still here. I said, no, they cut it down. They thought it was dead. But now you'll see. There's a nice tree coming out of that root, because they didn't uproot it. They just cut it off. It still had life in it. So we can't just snap off our material desires so easily. We have to go down. And so the best help you can find is someone who actually will go down and find that big ball of grassroots. It's like a mother root, you know, and yank that out. And then, although it'll probably grow back, but anyway, in Florida it does, but you have the best luck in your garden growing. Now, there's other kind of weeds. They're called dollar weeds. They're round. They look like a silver dollar, but they're green. And it spreads like crazy. It has these little things that look like spaghettis, and they just go everywhere. You pull on one, and it goes real far. And it's a perfect name because it's like our desire for money, which gives us sense gratification. It's a dollar weed. And you take one little teeny piece of that root, and you happen to put it in another place in your garden, finished, it's going to take over. One little teeny scrap. So we always have to pull those out separate and put them in a burn pile because they're so bad. So this is just one little desire for sense gratification. That, especially for money, it will go from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. And it's so hard to uproot. It completely takes over your garden. And you try to smother it with, you think, oh, I'll take out the roots and I'll just put a bunch of hay on there, or I'll put a bunch of compost on there. It goes, ah, wonderful. I like that moisture. Ah, wonderful. So now I don't do that anymore. So we try to think, oh, well, just a little sense gratification, put a little, you know, a little this, a little that, a little bit extra prasadam, a little, boom, there goes your garden, you know, full of weeds again. And then there's the tubers. They go deeper. You put those down there, and they don't come up except for like one time in a year, if you're lucky. They'll come up and they'll do their thing. They'll give a nice flower you can offer to Krishna, and then they die back in it. Don't see them again. And so, same with the lotus flower. One time a year, you put a seed down in the ground. I highly recommend you go to the eco farm right now. This is lotus season. We have at least 24 blooming in one of the ponds. It's gorgeous. At every single degree of blooming, it's actually fantastic. It's a beautiful sight. People taking pictures with them over there in the gardens. But you put this seed in, you don't see it, and then all of a sudden this lotus flower is on a long stump, comes out of the buck, and they have the water way up high, and then you get this beautiful thing you could offer to Krishna if you can get out there to pick them. And so this is our real root. We have a real root, and that is loving service to Krishna, which is beautiful. And we don't want to take those out of the garden. We want to water those roots. We have to find them, first of all. And the spiritual master helps us find them with this knowledge of devotional service. We dig down deep and we water those, and then gradually we'll get that fruit that we can offer Krishna. And hopefully it'll take over all the weeds. Actually, the lotus flowers really spread. They take over your whole garden. So I have to like pick off the seeds so they don't drop into the water. So this is a little bit of gardening advice, that we want to water the real root by taking Kapila Dev's instructions, do devotional service as much as we can according to the directions of the spiritual master. And this is will give us real happiness. The hankering and lamenting for sense gratification, not going to happen. And we have to be careful not to over-endeavor. Just like in gardening, again, sometimes you can, you know, like there's this lamb's quarters. It's a really nice natural spinach that we use in the kitchen. We pick it. But if you can pick it and offer it to Krishna. But then if you leave that plant in there, the roots get so big that you pull on the root and all the good plants around it come up with it. You have to get a shovel and go really deep. So if you're over-endeavoring and you have to like be offensive to devotees or something like that, or you try to put someone down to push yourself up, then you're going to ruin your garden also. So over-endeavoring is not a good thing too. But we want to give the best thing, which is our loving service to the spiritual master, and hopefully he'll take it and he'll pinch it off and offer it to the deities, offer it to Krishna. So anyone have any reflections or questions?
Thank you so much. I'm really appreciating the garden analogies, actually. I mean, you know, thinking of Lord Chaitanya as the original gardener and the distribution, you know, of his love. And anyone who works, you know, at pulling weeds, actually, oddly enough, you know, the thing to discard, you know. But when doing that, in the little bit of time that I've also worked in gardens, the reflections are amazing, you know, and you shared so many of them here today. And, you know, your own reflections in doing this service. And, but it's true, you know, when you're in there, hands in the dirt, and you're pulling these weeds, and you realize, you know, that how deep you have to go, you know, and then it just, you know, Krishna's energy, you know, that energy just kind of resonates within, like, yeah, how deep. You know, I'm just on the surface with my own, you know, roots, like you say, finding those roots. And I really appreciate that, you know, you saying with the lotus, you know, how, yes, we have to really, through the endeavor and the love of the spiritual master, that he guides us to find our true roots. And then that's when the, you know, the authenticity and the true work or service begins. Yeah. So thank you. I appreciate it very much.
It's hard, hot work. But we have to go in within ourselves and actually admit that we have these weeds in there. And that sometimes it's hard to see. It's nice when someone helps you see, oh, you know, actually you're getting kind of attached here, you know. So you might want to clean up your act. So that's always helpful. It's a cooling breeze. Oh, yeah, look at that one. I forgot about that one. Yank it out. Because we have to have a clean heart, and that purification has to be done, and it's not easy work. Yes?
Thank you. I like your class. You show Vigyana with your Echo Farm there. But usually when we talk about Vigyana, do we talk about spiritual realization or just anything?
Here, Prabhupada says jnana is spiritual understanding.
Spiritual understanding.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, like, when kids go to school or we go to school, we hear things, and later on we have realization, even though they're material concepts. So just like you're talking about a gardening, you know, you plant a thing, and then later on you see that the weeds come. I always wonder, why so much weeds? You know, you clean it up, and where are more weeds coming, even if you get the roots? But so there is realization with material concepts too, aren't they? Is that called vijnana or not?
That's a type of knowledge, as I said in the beginning, that you can go to college and learn all kinds of things, and I'm sure it's enlightening to find out how to make an atomic bomb and how to do this and how to do that, how electricity works, how, you know, I was amazed. You know, I want to be a marine biologist. You know, you have a craving for this knowledge, but it's not the knowledge that human life is meant to pursue. It's very temporary. And if I took the courses I took in college today, now, if I went to college and took the same courses, I bet you everything would be different. I bet you everything's changed. They have new stuff, new teachers, new ideas, new speculations. I'm sure it's a whole different thing. So, you know, you buy something and then you have to buy something new because it's a new, you know, because that's the material world. It's frustrating. That kind of knowledge is only gets you deeper and deeper in debt.
Well, I mean, when you get vijnana from spiritual knowledge, it's so refreshing and nice.
Yeah. That's why my parents couldn't understand that I could be happy, but the knowledge itself was such a relief, real happiness, and it's eternal. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bhakti Yoga ki jai.